The following is a presentation of Crane's Chicago Business, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Radio.
I'm Amy Guth, and today on Crane's Daily Gist, in a surprise move, the CEO of the utilities business at ComEd parent Exelon abruptly retired. Her departure comes as ComEd and Exelon are entangled in an investigation into the company's lobbying activities in Springfield. We'll talk about that coming up, but first, classes have been canceled at Chicago Public Schools ahead of an expected teacher strike. The move follows CTU's bargaining team recommendation that CPS teachers walk off the job starting tomorrow. Crane's political columnist Greg Hines joins a podcast today to talk about strike impact, options for parents and students, contract resolution, and what might be ahead for Lightfoot and for city aldermen. Here's our conversation. All right, so we have a looming strike set to start tomorrow. CPS classes have been canceled starting tomorrow. Talk us through what we can expect to see.
Well, what you can expect to see is a mean and nasty fight that doesn't have a certain end, that it's not over money, which would make it easy to settle, but is over principle and power, specifically whether the mayor will agree to work it, weaken her bargaining power by including in the contract certain non-negotiable things that the union wants in, like size of class, number of support personnel, things of that nature.
And looking at it from your perspective, it sounds like it's everybody's kind of gathering strength for this to be a pretty long road.
I'm not going to guess whether this is going to be a short one or a long one. There's a possibility here that the union could decide after a couple of days that it's made its point. But there's also a possibility that they're going to hold to their principle. The union now is really feeling its oats. It's been chafing for a couple of decades about limits on their bargaining ability. They want to elect members of the Board of Education, which would increase their power, and the mayor has opposed their latest plan. If that's really what they want, this could be a long fight, because she can't give that up, because it would really put her in a terrible position of being rolled as other negotiations with unions like the police come up.
Indeed. And so when you're talking about those points of principle and power, where are the breakdowns of those? What are the crux of them?
Well, the crux is under state law that was changed in 1995 when Republicans ran the legislature and Rich Daley was mayor, that he agreed upon. The mayor took direct control of Chicago Public Schools. He appointed members of the Board of Education. Previously, he had to go through a nominating process. That's important. Equally, arguably more important, is that certain subjects no longer had to be discussed. You had to bargain about salary and benefits and things like that. But when it came to the size of the workforce, what maximum class size could be, when it came to ancillary employees like school nurses and librarians and stuff like that, that was only optional if the board wanted to do it. Well, the union wants to make those mandatory now, and they want to include specific guarantees in the new contract that a number of people are going to be rehired, which would effectively mean you'd have to bargain about it every contract from now on. The mayor says she's willing to go a fair amount of the way down the road to hire all those people, but she doesn't want to contractually obligate herself to do it. That's what the fight is about.
Yeah, and that's a contentious point indeed. So what is the point that most people miss when they're, you know, the average citizen looking at this issue facing us starting tomorrow? What do you think people miss when we talk about strikes?
I think, well, the other complicating fact here is that when you've had prior teacher strikes, kids have been able to send their kids over to the local Park District field house. You know, if mom and dad are both working, that way a junior is okay and somebody's watching over them. But in this case, the Chicago Park District is talking about going on strike at the same time, which complicates the thing. The result is that CPS says they're going to keep the schools open with supervisory personnel, but there will be no education going on. The kids will, you know, presumably play video games or go to the library or whatever, but there won't be classes. That complicates things a little bit more.
Indeed it does, because then there's the economic impact on households of, okay, I got to go find childcare or send my kid to supervised hangout time.
Yeah, and, you know, the ultimate answer is, how does this how does this end? And it's going to end at some point. And what's the cost? Chicago taxpayers have been under incredible pressure. We've had hundreds of millions of dollars in new taxes that were adopted in recent years to pay for teacher pensions. These are the pensions that teachers only pay 2% of salary for. You have a city budget coming up next week that's got an $838 million hole in it. You know, at a certain point, you're going to break the camel's back here. There's only so much taxpayers can afford to come up with. So how expensive this is and whether CPS can pay for it and whether their newfound financial stability will be kept or go in the dumper, that's on the table too.
Yeah. Earlier this week, you and I talked about how this is really kind of a make it or break it time for the Lightfoot administration. She's got some big couple weeks ahead, and we're in that week one right now. What are the places that you're most going to be watching, or the tells you're going to be looking for most?
I mean, one is I want to see how this contract gets resolved. Two, I want to see what the aldermen who were friends of the CTU and were elected with CTU help, how they respond to her budget proposals. There's a connection there. You know, they could say, you're not helping, you're not giving the teachers their contracts, I'm not going to give you what you want on the budget. That is certainly going to be a tell. And the third tell is how much help the mayor is going to get from Springfield. She finally released her proposal to revive the Chicago casino, but it's not gotten a very good reception. The governor doesn't appear to be backing the government ownership aspect of her proposal that she included. So that's another thing to keep an eye on.
Yeah, lots of moving parts today. Well, I know you got lots to do today, so thanks for taking the time to talk. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Coming up, Governor Pritzker is using the annual release of his own income tax returns as ammunition in his campaign to get the state to adopt a graduated income tax. We'll talk about that and other stories right after this word from our sponsor. Wintrust Commercial Banking offers a full suite of financial resources designed to meet the needs of middle market businesses and larger companies. With comprehensive and personalized financial solutions coupled with bankers who get to know your industry's demands, Wintrust Commercial Banking is committed to providing the tools to help your business reach its strategic growth initiatives. You've got a vision for your business, and Wintrust Commercial Banking is here to help you see it through. Find out more at wintrust.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Looking to today's stories, in a surprise move, Anne Pramaggiore has retired from Exelon, effective immediately. The company announced the move after the stock market closed yesterday. She had been CEO of Exelon's utilities business, overseeing regulated distributors of electricity in Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and D.C., among other places. Until her promotion last year to that important post, Pramaggiore had been CEO of ComEd. Her untimely departure comes as ComEd and Exelon are entangled in a federal corruption probe of several current and former politicians in Illinois. The most recent of those centers on State Senator Martin Sandoval, whose daughter works for ComEd and was hired while Pramaggiore served as CEO. A September 23rd federal search warrant identified but didn't name four separate Exelon officials in a request for items related to them and any issues supported by any of those businesses or individuals, including but not limited to rate increases. Exelon and ComEd disclosed October 9th that they were the focus of the Sandoval probe and that Exelon had established a special committee made up of independent directors to oversee compliance with the federal investigation. 2 days later, the search warrant was made public. A short time before, on October 4th, ComEd disclosed in an SEC filing that Fidel Marquez, senior VP at ComEd in charge of government affairs, had retired October 2nd. The terse wording in Exelon's press release didn't give reason for Pramaggiore's retirement, and a spokesperson declined to comment on whether it had anything to do with the probe. Calvin Butler Jr., in the interim, will fill her role, who steps up from his current role as CEO of Exelon-owned Baltimore Gas and Electric. A company spokesperson did, however, confirm that Pramaggiore will receive $7.7 million in benefits that she's entitled to under her employment contract, an $885,000 cash payout, and $6.8 million in previously unvested stock awards that accelerate upon retirement, according to an SEC filing. A Boston real estate investor is raising its already sizable bet on Chicago, buying its sixth big downtown office building in 5 years. Beacon Capital is under contract to pay around $230 million for the 40-story tower at 190 South LaSalle, according to sources familiar with the deal who spoke with Cranes. The pending sale at a little less than $290 a square foot would be substantially less than the $250 million or more that several industry experts predicted the building would fetch, but it's still well above the $211 million $1.5 million that seller Tishman Speyer paid in 2013 for the nearly 800,000 square foot building, according to Cook County property records. The deal, though, signals Beacon's unwavering confidence in the Chicago office market, which is teeming with tenant demand. It also helps thaw an ice cold year for downtown office sales deep in an economic growth cycle. The purchase would be the second largest downtown office sale of 2019, behind only the deal that San Francisco-based Spear Street Capital recently struck to buy a 46-story office tower at 500 West Monroe for more than $400 million. But with a cloudy property tax picture ahead from sweeping changes to Cook County's property valuation system under Assessor Fritz Kagi, office building sales volume in the Chicago area has recently plummeted. Through the first half of 2019, it totaled just more than $1 billion, down 71% year over year and the lowest mark for that period since 2011. That's according to research firm Real Capital Analytics. Beacon, meanwhile, has been pretty bullish on the local market while some investors sit on the sidelines. The company and its joint venture partners have spent more than $1.1 billion buying other prominent downtown office buildings since 2015. More on this story and others at chicagobusiness.com. Earlier today, the full city council has voted to approve zoning regulations for recreational marijuana sales, including a revised exclusion map and limits to where new shops can set up. However, 10 aldermen voted no, with demands to go to Springfield to rework marijuana legislation to help more minority businesses. Alderman Anthony Beal of the 9th Ward was the first to speak out against the ordinance, telling colleagues on the floor of the city council, quote, "When we look at the fact that the black and brown community has been adversely affected by the cannabis industry, jails have been filled up, people have been locked up, and now we are being locked out of benefiting from this particular ordinance." He continued by saying, "How do we look in this great city, allowing cannabis to be rolled out with 22 licenses, all owned by people who are not of color, coming out of the gate? With these changes, no cannabis business can set up shop by right. They must either go through a special approval process with the city's Zoning Board of Appeals or attempt to change their parcel zoning, then go to the Zoning Board of Appeals. Previous versions allowed cannabis businesses to set up in many manufacturing areas without additional approvals. Cannabis dispensaries would be permitted in mixed-use buildings, but not in exclusively residential ones. Craft growers would be required to get a special use license from the ZBA to operate a retail space. Cannabis businesses that want to be in planned developments must be approved by the ZBA as well. Such businesses will also be required to hold a public meeting in the ward they hope to locate in before they head to the ZBA, and the local alderman must be informed of that meeting. If the mayor seeks to change marijuana boundaries or raise the caps on the number of licenses that can operate within a certain district, she must ask for city council approval. The change also allows for opponents to a cannabis business to collect enough signatures to create restricted cannabis zones. If they then submit that petition to the city clerk, it'll result in a 90-day stay of any applications or proceedings before the ZBA. And that was definitely the most times I've ever said ZBA back-to-back. Anyway, moving on to another story for today. Governor Pritzker and his wife report paying more than $36 million in federal and state taxes, including payments on his behalf from family trusts. And his campaign committee says it would have been millions more with his proposed graduated income tax. So yes, let me throw a bunch of numbers at you. Okay, documents released today indicate that Pritzker and his wife, M.K. Pritzker, had total income of more than $6 million last year. A total of $5.55 million of that was taxable, on which the Pritzkers paid federal income taxes of more than $1.8 million at a rate of 33.99%. His taxable state income was slightly higher at nearly $6.2 million with a total tax of $216,000. Still with me? Okay, good. In addition to that, family trusts benefiting the governor paid $5.3 million in state and $29 million in federal taxes. So had the graduated income tax that Pritzker wants been in effect, his combined state bill, both his personal earnings and his trust income, would have climbed an additional $2.8 million to $8.3 million this year. That, according to a statement from his campaign committee. Pritzker's fair tax plan, as he calls it, will be on the ballot as a referendum in November 2020. But for now, you can head over to chicagobusiness.com and you can see Pritzker's 2018 tax returns for yourself. But for now, until tomorrow, that's all for Crane's Daily Gist. Thank you so much to producer Haima Black, as well as to today's guest, Greg Hines. Find breaking business news, special reports, data, and tons more at chicagobusiness.com. And go find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, and let's continue the conversation there about these and other business stories most on your mind. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow.